Genesis chapter 45. And last week, Joseph had his brothers and all in front of him, and Judah was making the cry out to him that, look, I have told my daddy that I would take Benjamin's place. I would told my daddy that I would take his place if he didn't come back. If at all possible, Joseph, would you let me take Benjamin's place and let Benjamin go free? And Joseph is hearing his brother make this thing, and his feelings are all swelling up inside of him, and finally he gets to the place where now he can't contain himself. He's got his brothers all in front of him. He's got Benjamin, his actual mother, brother, father, brother, there also. And he's sitting here, and he's got all of his men and his servants around about him in the room. And Joseph could not refrain himself. He said he got to the point where he says, you know, I've been trying to figure out whether or not these guys are serious or not. I've been trying to figure out whether these guys really have repented or got their act together or not. And now I'm just at the point where I just cannot hold back any longer. I've got to tell them who I am. He says, I just got to reveal myself to him. And he says, and he could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried. Now, when you see that word cried there, you would think he started crying as in tears coming down. But no, he cried as in giving a command or an order or a verbal loud shout, saying, cause every man to go out from me. In other words, his cry or his loud, authoritative voice, he says, all you servants, all you Egyptians, everybody but these guys right here, get out of the room. Y'all get out of here, because I want to talk to them. And of course, his louder voice didn't go away because he was so excited and so full of himself that even when they go outside, they can hear. They can hear what's happening. So he says, cause every man to go after me. And there stood no man with him while he made himself known unto his brethren. And he said to his brethren, he says, look, I am Joseph. And he went and he wept aloud. And he was weeping aloud enough that the people outside the door and outside the room, the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard. In other words, the Pharaoh and his folks wasn't right there by the time the people outside the door heard. Some of them, there's always a tattletale. There's always somebody's going to spread the news. Joseph's brothers are here, which would be good news. Because if Joseph was that great, how great would his brothers and all be, right? So they run and they got to tell Pharaoh, man, Joseph's family, Joseph's brothers are here. What glad news. And he wept aloud and the Egyptians heard and they were there. And Joseph said to his brethren, I am Joseph. He didn't use his I am Zaph-Nes-Ferez or whatever they named him in the four chapters back or whatever. But he said, my name is Joseph. And he said it to him in Hebrew. He spoke to him in their language. He didn't use an interpreter here. There wasn't somebody between him and them. He says, I'm your brother. He didn't say, I'm the Lord, I'm the governor or whatever. I said, I am Joseph. I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? Now, he had already heard them say that he was alive. He pretty well knew that he was alive. But in his excitement, he wanted to just clarify it. Does my father yet live? Is that old man still out there? Is he still really in love and caring for his family and stuff like that? Does he still live? Is he still alive? And his brethren could not answer him. He's sitting there, wait a minute. This is Joseph. That was bad enough when the governor was mad at us because we stole his cup. Now the governor happens to be Joseph. You know, remember now, we threw him in a pit. Then we sold him to some Ishmaelites. And they sold him to Potiphar. And now he's right here, and he's the second in command of Egypt. Oh boy. They couldn't answer. They didn't know what to answer. They didn't know how to answer, because all their sins and everything they had done just fell on top of their shoulders. Back last chapter, well, it's for the sins that we did, but they didn't quite, you know. But now I'm looking at the one who knows my sin. I'm looking at the one who knows everything we did. Same as when we stand and Christ looks at us, and before we were forgiven, he knew exactly everything we did and what we did. In fact, after we're forgiven, he still knows everything we've did and done. So when we stand before Christ, or stand before God in Christ, he knows everything about it. Well, now his brothers are standing before Joseph, and they're not just before some governor who thinks he knows something. They're before his brother who knows he knows something. They have no excuse. You ain't going to lie out of this. Well, you know, we really didn't mean that. No, that ain't going to work. So, and they did not know how to answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. I'd have been troubled too if I'd done what I did to him. And Joseph said to his brother, come near. In other words, where they probably backed up a few steps when they said, you're Joseph. They probably said, oh boy. They're trying to say, how close is the door? And can we run there? Can we get out of here? And he says, come here. He's probably still sitting up on the little chair that he does his business out of. Come near me. Come here. I pray you. In other words, he wasn't angry. He wasn't trying to force something on him or try to do something with him. In a loving manner, he says, come here. Come near to me. I'm your brother. He says, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said to them, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now, he didn't say you sold into Egypt not to make them feel guilty. But what he's trying to do is say, yeah, the providence of God, yeah, you thought you were getting rid of me. You thought maybe you were doing this. And he's not trying to rub it in here, but he said, I'm the one you sold into Egypt, to make sure they understood he is Joseph. Because nobody else would have knew that. Only the real live Joseph would have known that we sold you into Egypt. And he says, and you sold me into Egypt, but you didn't sell me into Egypt because of your way. Although you were wicked, you were ungodly in what you did, but God in his providence used your greed, used your anger, used your stuff that most people say, well, God, don't do that. Well, he used all their stuff that they thought they were using against Joseph to get him into Egypt. That's the only way he could have got there. Pharaoh wasn't going to send him a letter and say, hey, I need you to come over here to Egypt. So if God says, if I need Joseph in Egypt, I've got to work the circumstance. Some people say, well, we can stop God. Nah, we don't stop God. He just knows how to work our circumstances and make them work for his good. He knows how to do those things. It says, and you sold me in Egypt. Now, therefore, be not grieved. In other words, don't feel bad. Don't feel upset. Don't feel like I fixed to sentence you to go to prison or something like that. Don't feel grieved or nothing of that nature, nor angry with yourself. Don't be mad at yourself because of what you did. Don't be upset because of what went down, that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. And when we look at that, we always say, to preserve the Hebrews. But wait a minute. They were Canaanites in that line that came with those guys to get corn. There were other folks from other countries in that line that came with them to get corn. And even the Egyptians, who's called the world, were there being saved. So when Joseph came, he didn't just save the Hebrews like some folks. Well, he saved the Hebrews. They went over here and he kept them alive for 400 something. He not only kept them alive, he kept the Egyptians alive. So when God takes care of his people, other people get blessed as a sidebar. Same thing with us. If we got lost people in our families or lost loved ones or whatever, if they're hanging around with us, whether they know it or not, they're getting blessed because we get blessed. So we want them to hang around because we want to see some blessing going on. So it says here, you might have meant it for some evil thing. You might have meant it to get rid of me, but God in his providence brought me here to save alive many people. Not just the 70 that came out, or 69 that came out of Canaan, but all Egypt and all the Canaanites and everybody else that was around about that neighborhood. He preserved life. God could have very easily right there said, all right, here's what I need to do. If I want to have one group of family, I can just let everybody else die and just keep the Hebrews. But he didn't do that. So in his providence and his sovereignty, he says, I'm saving as many people alive as I choose fit to save alive, and I'm also going to take care of my people. My people, who is going to have the Son of God, who's going to be the Savior of all who believe. And when I say world there, that means all who believe. The world of Christians, the world of saved folks, the world of the godly, those folks. And then he said, for these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in which there shall neither be yearling nor harvest. In other words, I don't know if you've looked at hard ground after a drought. You can hardly break it with a plow, even a good plow. And it's been 2 years of drought. There's going to be 5 more years of drought. Joseph already has God's word on that. So he's not going to sit out there and say, all right, we're going to plow up all the fields this year and we're going to plant all these seed, because he already knows there ain't no rain coming. Now, they might have planted a little seed near the riverbank if there's any river left, hoping to get a little crop going there. But as far as Joseph said, well, every year we're going to take all this much seed out of the thing and we're going to plant it. He would have said there would be no point in planting that much corn and wasting that much feed. These guys could be eating and feeding and everything else, because we're just putting that in the ground just to sit there, because the rain's not coming. God's already said there's going to be 5 more years. So if God has given you good word, there's going to be 5 more years of drought. For you to go plow and to plant would be kind of dumb. That'd be saying, God, I don't believe you. That's exactly what it means. We're going to grow a crop whether you like it or not. Really. So he says, it's 5 more years and there's going to be neither plowing nor planting going on. No harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. In other words, through this great drought, not only is he going to save your life, he's also going to place you in a place where you can be fed and protected and taken care of. He's going to put you in the land of Goshen. He's going to put you in the land of Ramses. He's going to put you in the fertile field, in a very fertile valley, and he's going to let you and your family live there till he's ready to bring you back. He said he's going to preserve your posterity. He's going to help you live in the earth, and he's going to do it by a great deliverance. Great deliverance is, there's no way these men could have made it if God had not intervened and had corn stored to the abundance. They would have all perished. So now it was not you that sent me hither. It was not you. You may think you did this, but you really didn't do this. You might want to be taking the credit for it, or you might say right now, I don't want to take the credit for it. I wish there was some way I could get at it. But you're not the one that sent me here. And if I was in the flesh, I'd say, I'm going to take care of you. But because I know that God did not do that, you do this, but God used you to do this to get these people alive and my children alive and your children alive, don't think that you're going to get credit for this. You did not do this. But God. That's one of them but gods I like. But God took care of this. God was in charge. God knew what he was doing. God knew the things that was going on. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh. That doesn't mean he was a dad, but that means he was a counselor. Someone that Pharaoh took great knowledge of and wisdom from. And when Pharaoh had a question, he'd say, let me go check on Joseph and see what he's got to say about this. Let me find out what he thinks about this tax or that tax or this corn crop or this field over here. If Joseph's keeping everybody alive for 7 years, maybe he's got something I want to hear from him every now and then. He's made him like a father. In other words, that being like a man of wisdom or understanding to go to whenever you needed to know something. Like a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house. In other words, he was the second in command under Pharaoh and the ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. When Joseph spoke, that was kind of like E.F. Hutton. When Joseph spoke, everybody said, "What'd he say? I don't miss this." Because that man don't speak nothing but right things. So if he was talking over yonder, everybody's going, "I wonder what he's talking about. I wonder what he's got on his mind." Because I want to be the first one to get on this thing. If I need to buy this here stock or this here bond or whatever Joseph's buying, I want to be ready. I want to be on top of it. So when Joseph spoke or did things, people listened. He was second in command. He was in charge. "And thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen," which is right there close to the Arabian border there, close up there. So actually they're separated, but they're not right in the middle of Egypt, but they're sort of pushed off to one corner. So they still live separated, but yet still protected by the Egyptians. They're in Egypt, so the Egyptian armies and all that has to make sure they're protected, but yet they're not right up in amongst all the Egyptian people too much. So it says here they were up near the Arabian border in Goshen. "And thou shalt be near unto me." In other words, he's far close enough that he can ride out with his little chariot and take care of them, see if they need anything, see what's going on with them, check on his daddy, check on his brother, see how they're treating each other. He said, "Thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children and thy children's children and thy flocks and thy herds and all that thou hast." In other words, he says, you're going to be prospering. If you're having children's children, you're doing pretty good. So he says, you're going to be right there in Goshen. You're going to be right there around where I'm at. And I'm going to even see you grow old. I'm going to see your children grow old. I'm going to see your children's children grow old. And not only that, you're going to have flocks and herds and much cattle. They're going to blossom and prosper right there in Goshen. "And there will I nourish thee." In other words, I'm going to make sure you do. So I'm going to give you a hedge bet. I'm going to make sure you got the finest cows, you got the finest sheep, you got the finest animals to make sure that everything that you're breeding and raising is going to be the very best. Not only is God on charge of that, but I'm going to sort of hedge it from my side. I'm going to make sure that you got the best houses. You see, when they came here, you say, they all came here in tents and everything else. Where'd they live at? I bet Joseph had houses built. I bet they was always sitting there waiting on them when they got there. While they was going to get pop, he was over here building houses. He says, I'm going to nourish you up. "For yet there are 5 years of famine, lest thou and thy household and all thou hast come to poverty." In other words, if you don't do what I'm telling you, here's your choice. You can come live in Goshen. You can listen to what I got to say. You can let me sustain you. Or you can go back and try to live it out there in Canaan, but you'll perish in Canaan. God has sent me here to save you. Listen to what I'm telling you. God has sent me here to protect you. Listen to what I'm telling you. Let me nourish you. Let me build you up. Let me keep you from poverty. "And behold, your eyes see." In other words, you can actually see me. You can actually know from what I'm telling you who I am. It says, "Your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin." In other words, Benjamin can even see that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. In other words, there's not somebody else here interpreting, trying to fake it or act like me. It's actually me. And say, you know. Now that I've revealed myself, you can look at the way I walk and talk and everything else. You can tell it's really me. And my brother Benjamin, he can tell it's really me. So this is not somebody trying to pull the wool over your eyes. You can see that it's me. "And ye shall tell my father." Ye shall tell my father all my glory. But the biggest thing that would got Jacob excited was if you just said, Joseph is alive. He didn't care if he was the governor or the dishwasher. If Joseph's alive, that's all he wanted to hear. My boy Joseph's alive. He said, you go tell my father of all my glory in Egypt. In other words, you tell him that I'm second in command. You tell him that I am right under Pharaoh. You tell him that I can furnish him with anything he needs. You tell him it's going to be okay. Come on, Dad, bring your stuff. And the Egyptians, and of all that ye have seen, and ye shall haste and bring down my father here. In other words, you need to get back to the house and get him. I'm telling you, here's what you need to tell him. Here's what you need to do. You go get my dad. You go get him and bring him here right now. Don't waste no time. You make sure he understands I'm alive. You make sure he understands I'm in charge. You make sure he understands there's no hurt to him if he comes. You go get my father and you bring him hither. And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck. And he cried and he wept and he kissed him. And I guarantee you, like they kissed over there, he kissed him on one side and then he kissed him on the other side. So he made sure he loved him. He said he fell on Benjamin's neck and he wept. And I'm guarantee you that he left a big old sobby wet spot somewhere there on one of them shoulders. He was glad to see Benjamin. He was glad that Benjamin was alive and he could find a hold of him. And he wept. And Benjamin wept on his neck. So we got two guys with a bunch of wet spots all over their shoulders, I guarantee you, because they cried and wept because they loved each other. He thought he was dead. Could you imagine if somebody told you for 20-something years that your brother was dead and then one day he walked in? Some of these guys that go to the army and get supposed to get killed overseas, and all of a sudden one day they show up and you say, wow, you were dead, but now you're alive. Yeah, we're going to touch that. We won't touch that one too hard, but that's a fact. Benjamin thought Joseph was dead, and now he's kissing him and hugging him and crying on him. Yes, indeed. Moreover, he kissed all of his brethren. He says here, moreover, he kissed all of his brethren. So not only did he kiss Benjamin, his closest brother, but he made sure every one of them that had treated him bad, he kissed them on both cheeks. He cried on their shoulders, on both of them. It says, moreover, he kissed all his brethren and wept upon them. In other words, he showed as much love to all of them practically as he did to Benjamin. He showed love to all. He didn't say, well, Simeon, I know what you was thinking, partner. I'm not going to kiss you. But no, he kissed all his brethren. There's not going to be a tribe in Israel that the Savior don't kiss and bring in. Says he kissed them all. And he wept upon them. And after that, his brethren talked with him. Yeah. They didn't just stand off in the corner shivering and quivering and say, well, he's kissed us, but I'm just waiting for the other shoe to fall here. Sooner or later, he's going to wake up. Sooner or later, he's going to get his mind back together. But they talked with him. They communed. They had fellowship. They had love going on. He says, they talked with him, and that the fame thereof, I'll get the right word in a minute, and the fame thereof was heard in Pharaoh's house. In other words, they're sitting there talking about what they've been doing all these years and who Joseph is and who Jacob is and what all they've been going on and who the grand youngins are and stuff like that. And while they're doing all this talking, the fame of what they've been was heard in Pharaoh's house. Somebody was taking this all the way up to the capital. Said, man, Joseph's brothers are here. Joseph's family's here. Joseph's daddy might be coming. Joseph has finally got something to be rejoicing over and happy about. Joseph lives and his family knows it. He says, in the fame thereof, and was heard in Pharaoh's house saying, Joseph's brethren are come. And it pleased Pharaoh well and his servants. So Pharaoh's saying, I'm going to get in on this. you know, they're having a little party down there and getting all excited down there. Maybe I'm going to intervene and sort of work some of this governmental magic stuff out. Because naturally, whatever Joseph said that he was going to do, he probably had to run it up to heel to Pharaoh and say, "Hey, Pharaoh, I got my brothers here. And we got this little piece of land out there in Goshen. Ain't nobody out there much. How about I let them go out there?" So I don't think he just done this without any kind of conversation with Pharaoh. So Pharaoh's hearing this, and Pharaoh says, and Pharaoh says to Joseph, saying unto thy brethren, "This do ye." In other words, Pharaoh saying, "Hey, Joseph, here's a good thing you ought to go do. This do ye." He says, "This do ye. Laid your beasts and go get you into the land of Canaan." In other words, you go ahead and load up them wagons. You go ahead and load up the beast. You go ahead and load up some corn, whatever you need to go back and sustain them while you go out there and get them. But there's a reason he's sending wagons. Before, they were carrying back donkeys loaded down with bags. Now Pharaoh's sending wagons full of corn to feed the flocks, to feed the people. And when the wagons get emptied, guess what they'll hold? Furniture and tables and people. So we sit here, "I'm going to take it back, look like you're getting corn, but yet I'm furnishing you a way to bring all that stuff back." He says, "You say unto the brethren, this do ye, laid your beasts, and go get ye into the land of Canaan, and take your father and your household, and come unto me." In other words, they are more than welcome. If they're anything like you, I need them. If they're anything like you, I want them. In fact, in the next chapter, I think he says, "Is there anyone of any industry around you? I want to put them over something." So Pharaoh said, if this Joseph is this smart and this good and this capable, what would his brothers be like in my business affairs? It says here, "You go get them and come unto me." Maybe that's where we got that "Come unto me" song from. "Come unto me, and I will give you the good of the land of Egypt." Now, isn't that what Christ tells us? "Come unto me, and I'll give you the good of heaven and inheritance and all those things. Come unto me." He says, "Come unto me, and I will give you the good of the land of Egypt." In other words, you ain't standing behind nobody. You're equal with the Egyptians, and everything that's good and right and upright in Egypt, you get some. You're going to get the good. We're not going to give you our trash or our leftovers or stuff like that. You bring him on in, and we're going to treat him just like royalty. We're going to treat him just like you, Joseph, just like your family. He says, "And they'll get the good of the land of Egypt, and ye shall eat of the fat of the land." In other words, you're not just getting the trimmings. You're getting the fruits and the vegetables and the corn and whatever the best stuff we got. When they come, they're getting it. We're going to treat those folks great. And they're going to eat the fat of the land. Oh boy, I'm thinking about a good old ribeye right now. "And thou art commanded." And see, here's Pharaoh still talking. "And now thou art commanded." Pharaoh didn't say, "It'd be a nice thing. It'd be a great thing." He said, "Joseph, you command your brothers to do this. They're under the authority of the Egyptian government. You go get your family. You go get your father. You go get your children. You go get your cattle." He says, "You're commanded. This do ye. Take you wagons." Now, they didn't come with no wagons. So they ended up getting wagons from Pharaoh, right? He says, "Take you wagons out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come." In other words, we don't want your wives and your children who are a little feeble and weak to have to walk in the desert, maybe follow around behind some cows. We want them to ride up in the wagons. And we understand that your dad is pretty old, probably around 120 years old, in fact. We don't want him to have to stub his toe walking over here. You put him up in that wagon so he can be comfortable, so he can be at ease. He says, "You bring you some wagons out there out of the land of Egypt, and you put your little ones. I don't want you to leave one." You're not leaving one person back in Canaan. You're not leaving one sheep back in Canaan. when you get called up, we're not leaving nothing back. Now, this is, he says here in this chapter, it says, but you can leave your stuff, don't worry about your stuff, because you're going to have better stuff. Now, if that's a sign of going to heaven, we're not taking nothing with us. Now, I'm thinking they load these wagons up with stuff, because we know how people are. But if it's a true picture of the rapture, us going home, when it says, don't worry about your stuff, don't worry about your car, don't worry about your boat, don't worry about your easy chair, your truck, or whatever, because when you come, get in the wagon. Just get in the wagon. Don't ask no questions. Get your little ones. Get your wife. Get your pop. Get in the wagon. No, that's right. It's loaded. It's going. Just load up. So bring your little ones and your wives and bring them and bring, get your father and come. Also regard not your stuff. I often ponder on that stuff because I know how people's nature are. Well, I'm taking my gesture drawer. I'm taking my music box. I'm taking my jewelry box. But if this is truly a picture of rapturing out and going to heaven, all that stuff, it's all going to be... We're getting a whole new set when we get there. We're getting a whole new house when we get there. Don't bring the old furniture. We're getting new furniture. He says, regard not your stuff. For the good of all the land of Egypt is yours. When we rapture out, regard not the stuff. Because the good of heaven, the good of everything that the Father has promised, is already up there waiting. Our treasures are in heaven. They're not down here. It says here, regard not your stuff. For the good of all the land, for the good of all the land, not just part of it, not just some of it, but you can traffic in all the land. You can buy, sell, trade wherever you want to go. The good of all the land of Egypt is at your disposal. It is yours. Just like ownership. And the children of Israel did so. They got the corn distributed out to the animals. What was necessary to come back to feed the flocks or the oxen and all while they brought the wagons back. But they made sure that they were in the wagon. All 69 of them, or I think there were 70 supposed to be in Israel, but only 69 came across because Joseph and his family was already there, or 68, something like that. But anyways, everyone that needed to come got in the wagon. They didn't leave one son, one grandson, one child, one anything back. They got them all in the wagons. They all came. Every one of them was moved by compassion. There wasn't a single one that says, I don't think I want to go. You see, because for it to be a true picture of going to heaven, you can't be a backslider. You can't change your mind and say, well, I'm going to stay here and stick it out. No. When he calls you home, you're going home. He brings them all. He doesn't miss one. He don't miss one. That's good for me. I like it. He says, and the children of Israel did so. Didn't say they argued about it. Didn't say they quarreled about it. They got in a wagon. And Joseph gave them wagons according to the commandment of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for the way. He didn't send them enough food to stay over there and camp out for 6 months. He gave them just enough provisions for the trip there and to come back. They didn't have nothing else to go say, well, we can hang out here for another 6 months, or maybe I'll think about it. You know how Jacob hard-headed, well, let's just think about this a while. No. There was enough food in that wagon to get them back to the plantation, back to Pharaoh's, back to Goshen, and they got in the wagon. When they heard of all the good things that Joseph had, wouldn't you get in the wagon? I mean, come on. Even out of just common sense, you say, why wouldn't anybody want to go to heaven? Why wouldn't anybody want to trust in Jesus, want to follow after Jesus? If Jesus could give you everything there is, if you could, in physical speaking, if you could have everything, mountains, hills, rivers, because you inherit everything, and still that's not enough to convince people to follow after Jesus. It takes an act of God to get them to follow after Jesus. Because people don't care about the mountains and the hills and all those things. They want something they can touch and feel right here. And their sin. Yeah, they want to do it wickedly, ungodly. Whereas there, you're going to do it godly. It's all yours, but it's going to be godly. And to them, well, I better hurry up. And to them he gave each man changes of raiment. In other words, every one of the brothers, he got raiment. And to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of raiment. Now he's still checking them out, see if they're going to get greedy or upset or whatever. But on the other hand, these guys are going to go back dressed like kings. Now what better way to make Jacob think that these guys really have seen Joseph and they really are, he is in charge, than they all come back dressed to the max, wearing the finest suits, the finest clothes, the finest shoes. So they all got a change of raiment. Benjamin got 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of raiment. So when he gets back to the house, he says, "Dad, look at all my clothes." And guess what? When you get to where we're going, you're going to have clothes just like this. Look at Simeon and Levi. And those, look at the Issachar. Look at his clothes, Dad. We have seen the man who's in charge. And guess what? It is Joseph. Joseph is alive. Who else would let us have all this stuff to come back with? I mean, we're over there dressed like shepherds. Ain't nobody over there owes us a dime. And yet, the man in charge is Joseph. And look, we all go get some new clothes. You didn't catch that, did you? When we get to heaven, what are we going to get? All new raiment. New clothes. White as snow. Better than a Long Ranger. We're going to be white all over. And it says, and to Benjamin he gave 500 raiment. And his father, he sent after this manner 10 asses laden with the good things of Egypt. In other words, I'm going to send you a bribe. I'm not just going to tell you how good it's going to be. I'm going to send you 10 asses laden down with everything that is good in Egypt. So when you open up these sacks and you say, "Whew, that's some nice stuff. I need to go to Egypt. Because if I live to be another 40 years old or so, I like nice stuff." So he sort of bribed him a little bit there. And he sent him all this manner of 10 asses laden with the good things of Egypt, and 10 asses laden with corn and bread and meat for this their father by the way. So while they're going, they would have all these things. So he sent his brethren away, and they departed, and he said unto them, "See that ye fall not out by the way." In other words, why are y'all going over there to get Dan? Y'all don't sit around and start saying, "Well, you remember when we sinned here, and you remember when we sent him down there, and when we go back, we're going to have to tell Dad what we did, or you know, how we put him in Egypt." No, I don't think they told Dad anything. I don't think Dad ever knew what happened. Joseph never brought it up, and they never brought it up. And Joseph said, "Don't you fall out, by the way. Don't you get all messed up with each other blaming and, but you, what was your fault? No, it was your fault. If you hadn't done all this, because God meant it for good. Don't you fall out, by the way." And they went up out of Egypt, because you always go up to go to Israel, and came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob their father. And they told him, saying, "Joseph is yet alive." I bet that just knocked him on his, put him in his chair, you know. "Joseph is alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt." And Jacob's heart fainted. I could just imagine finding out that my son, who I hadn't seen in 20-something years, is alive. And at that age, you sit there, wow. I just assumed I was going to go down to my grave in sorrow, and now you're telling me he's alive. He says, and he's alive. And his heart fainted, for he believed them not, which would have been a very difficult thing. If he's alive, why haven't I heard from him? If he's really alive, why didn't he at least send me a letter or something? And he didn't believe, or he had a hard time believing that Joseph was alive. That's the same thing with a lot of Christians. They say, "Well, he ain't come back yet. He ain't come back yet. But he's coming back. He's coming back." He says, And they told him all the words of Joseph. Give or take a few. Especially about them throwing him into Egypt. And they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said unto them. In other words, he gave them a directive. Here's what you tell my father. You don't tell him more or less. You tell my father I'm the governor. You tell my father I'm second in command. You tell my father I can put you in Goshen. I mean, you tell him that I've got all the food and stuff. I'm going to fix him up with houses. I'm going to fix him up with stuff. You just tell him only what I have told you to tell him. And when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. In other words, they probably beat the wagon. The wagons have been pulled by a bunch of oxes. I guess I left that part out for you. Well, oxes travel kind of slow. These other guys are on foot, hoofing it up with their donkeys, stuff like that. He sees them in their clothes. But then he looks over there and he says, look at the wagons. And these probably ain't little old bitty wagons. These are them big old carry your stuff wagons. Them big old work wagons. He says, and when he saw the wagons, his spirit, now we're not talking about his spiritual spirit, but his life, spirit of life, the thing that exhilarates a guy, that spirit was revived. Man, he was walking around like old mopey dope, and my son's dead, and this and here's about to die, and I'm about to lose this one, and I don't know what I'm going to do. I've done lost Rachel, and everybody else is against me. And now all of a sudden, he sees the wagons. And he see, here's the story about Joseph. And he says, wow. Man, he started doing the high step and the side step. I ain't going to dance. But anyways, he got perked up. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die. He knows he's going to die. But he says, at least I'm going to see my son Joseph before I die. Now we understand God has to be in charge of that. But we know God sent for him. So God's going to make sure. If God sends for you, he's going to make sure you get where you go. Just like when Jesus told those guys in the boat, you go to the other side. And that storm comes up and everyone says, what are we going to do? Blah, blah, blah. Well, didn't Jesus tell you to go to the other side? Well, if he told you you're going to go to the other side, you're going to go to the other side. Same here when he saw the wagons. He said, my son is alive. I will finally see my son before I die. In fact, he got to see his son for a few more years before he died. So next week, we're going to get to see, and Israel took his journey with all that he had. And on the way, he stops and he makes sacrifices unto his God, or the father Isaac's God. So even when he's leaving, he gives homage to God the Father for what's going on. All right, Brother Keith, would you pray for us, please?